it is not a bad thing. Exactly like you said, sales gets such a bad rap because everyone thinks it can be so icky and pushy, and it doesn't have to be, but you're a commodity. So, I mean, everybody should act like it, and then you'll be treated like it. And I think that's really what we miss a lot of the time.
You're listening to The Brands That Book Show, a podcast for creative entrepreneurs who want practical tips and strategies to build engaging brands and craft high-converting websites. We're your hosts, Davey and Krista, co-founders of a brand and website design agency specializing in visual brand design and show it websites. You're listening to The Brands That Book Show. Elizabeth Shields, co-founder of the popular CRM Rock Paper Coin, joins me on the podcast today for a wide-ranging interview. Initially, we set out to discuss proposals and her unique take on where proposals fit into the booking process. But the discussion evolved into a discussion about the current climate of the wedding industry and what Elizabeth has learned about Gen Z's purchasing motivations and patterns, and it was a fascinating conversation. Any service-based business could benefit from this conversation, but especially those in the wedding industry. As always, links and resources can be found in the show notes. Check them out at davyandkrista.com. And if you enjoyed this episode, please consider leaving a review over at Apple Podcasts. Now, on to the episode. All right, I have Elizabeth Shields with me here on the Brands That Book podcast, one of the co-founders of Rock Paper Coin. Elizabeth, welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to chat with you today.
I'm excited to chat with you, especially since our topic is I think sort of central to booking clients, you know, actually getting, you know, payment and a contract from clients, all things that Rock Paper Coin can help with. Your view on proposals in particular, I think is pretty interesting too. So I'm excited to dive into that. But for our listeners, could you just give everybody sort of your backstory? You know, how did you start Rock Paper Coin? Is software something that you've worked on for a long time, or did the wedding industry or event industry come first? Give us the background.
Yeah, absolutely. So my longtime business partner, Nora, and I, we were operating a wedding planning company out of Oregon in Washington, and it just started to grow and get really big. And we were starting to look for systems that would streamline our own process at the planning company. This was back in 2016. So HoneyBook was just kind of starting to come on the scene, and there was some other, you know, players as well. But we always just felt like at the end of the day, we wanted something super simple. We didn't want a ton of bells and whistles. We didn't want to overhaul our own systems. We simply wanted to marry DocuSign and PayPal. And we really just couldn't find that solution for our own company. So it was through that process, we very naively were like, how hard could it be to build software? And so we decided to build software for our own company. And we said we were going to, you know, put aside like a small sum of money. I think it was like $50,000, which was a ton of money to us. And we met up with some friends who had built software before, and they were like, oh, so you're going to probably need $500,000 to just get started. And we're like, what? Like, no way. Didn't believe them. So we went out and we did a bunch of market research about, you know, would other people want this tool and what were the tools that everybody was using. And it all came back really interesting. Because of our network and just being industry veterans, we got surveys all across the US, and we almost collected about 800 different responses. And it was through that we really saw this gap in the market for simple, clean, streamlined technology around the booking process. So we went out, we raised some money that allowed us to start building the software. And from there, we just continued to iterate on it, and we fundraised through some angel networks and ended up getting some venture capitals to invest in us, which really allowed us to get a product into the market and what it is today.
Yeah, that's awesome. So, you know, your friends told you 50K wasn't going to be enough. My guess is that it turned out maybe not to be enough, right? But you still went ahead and raised money. So I'm guessing that the feedback you got from these surveys was pretty overwhelming. You know, people wanted a tool like this.
Yeah, I think there was two interesting pieces to this is that we knew our pain at the company was so great that we knew we couldn't necessarily be alone on this island. Like, we knew that others were experiencing this, and the survey validated that. The survey came back that on average, an average business was paying 3.5% in processing fees and using 7 systems to simply book with the couple. So that would be everything from, you know, we didn't have Canva back in 2016. So that would be building proposals on like Word documents or in PowerPoint. exporting that, using that as a PDF, getting their contract again in Word or PDFs, uploading it into DocuSign. And, you know, you can then carry those steps throughout the entire booking process. And we're like, well, if everybody's using 7 to 10 different software platforms, like, what if we just built one? And everyone kept asking, once the, you know, survey came back to us, for the next like 3 or 4 months, people were emailing us like, did you find anything? Would you be willing to share the results? And it was through that we kind of thought, okay, if people are coming back to us and asking about this, I think then we should move forward and we should build this software and just see where that goes.
Yeah. And so you initially said that you were trying to basically marry DocuSign and PayPal. You know, that was like the initial feature set. Is that what you also heard from people? And I ask in part because we use a CRM and really it has all these features, you know, like a proposal feature, for instance. And we don't use any of it except the contract portion and the payment portion. You know, that's really at the end of the day what we need. So are we outliers there or is that pretty much what you found?
No, that's exactly what we found is a lot of these CRMs, they get a lot of bells and whistles because they're built for more like horizontal. So when you think about the wedding industry being like one vertical, and then you think about interior designers being another vertical, well, HoneyBook and Dubsado and 17 Hats, they have to account for every single like potential vertical when they're building this software and all of these different use cases that these business owners are bringing to them as a pain point. And I think that's really the downfall with going with like generic CRMs is that you then are in workflows that are not pertinent and they don't address your pain points within the wedding industry. The wedding industry, it's very simple. It's very straightforward. We don't need complicated technology. And it's through this that in building Rock Paper Coin and listening to our customers that we've been able to really understand clean, easy to use technology is harder to build. What we're doing is harder because it would be easier for us just to start releasing all of these features that people are requesting. But at the end of the day, that core product then gets diluted and the value diminishes. And I think that's what we're seeing today with brands. And I, you know, I love HoneyBook, I love Dubsado, but it doesn't work for the industry because we have very clean, clear practices around booking for couples. And whether you're a photographer, whether you're a, you know, event designer, planner, caterer, the booking process, it's the same.
So when I sent you an email, I wanted to talk specifically about proposals. And I was, you know, curious about where you felt like they fit into the booking process. And when you got back to me, you were like, well, you know, I don't feel like they fit into the booking process. So I'd love to hear, you know, just generally your thoughts on proposals, and maybe that can shift us into a conversation about generally the booking process and ways that we can make the booking process easier, and maybe just some best practices you've picked up from people using Rock Paper Coin.
Yeah, I feel like I've become more passionate about proposals, like truly in the last like 3 or 4 weeks. There's a huge disconnect. And again, I'll go back to these CRM companies are fueling this disconnect of what a proposal should be. Everybody should have a proposal, but a proposal is not a quote. And those two need to be completely teased out. Because when you send a proposal to a potential client, it should be a template and it should be a proposal of your business. It should be who you are as a business owner, what you're going to bring to the table, almost like a lookbook of maybe some of the your best work, some testimonials. And on the last page, if you want to include the package that you talked about with that couple, that's totally fine. But a proposal is not a line by line item of a price breakdown, whether you're a florist or a planner, and a list of all the other things that could be included in your services. That's a quote. And that should happen after the booking. Because when somebody is booking your business, they want to see a proposal because they want to know that you're going to do a good job, you're going to see their vision through, and yes, that you're within their price range. But allowing them to nitpick through line items and negotiate the price point before you've even had bigger conversations about design or colors or packages, that's later. And so you're selling yourself short, I think, by offering that upfront prior to a contract and an invoice. And those documents that I've seen, somebody just asked us on Rock Paper Coin if they could upload a 70-page proposal. I was like, dear Lord, why do we have this? Like, I want to talk to you about this actual document because yes, at the end of the day, but from a business standpoint, no, my God, please don't upload that. And so I think where people are building software that's encouraging you to act like the proposal you can pick and choose from, which then fuels into a contract and fuels into an invoice. I think at my core, that's a bad business practice. And you're not able to book your full value if you're doing that up front before they understand the value your company can bring to them.
Yeah, that's interesting. It reminds me of a conversation that we have with a lot of people on the web design side of things. People asking if they should put their full pricing on their website. And we've always recommended that people don't put their full pricing on their website. And it has nothing to do with hiding pricing or trying to be shady or anything like that. You know, and a lot of times there's a middle ground there, like putting a starting out price or putting, you know, exactly, the average couple spends, you know, such and such. But at that point, right, you are really trying to show the value and experience that you provide a couple. And, you know, at least for our workflow on a discovery call, we're always going to go through in detail pricing. And then before somebody books, they're going to very much understand, you know, the estimate we're giving them for their project. So there's not hiding it. It's just a matter of where it comes in the process. And I think, you know, to your point, when you put all that information in front of somebody, I think it can be overwhelming. Like, I can't imagine a 70-page proposal, you know? I don't know when you have time to go through a 70-page proposal.
I think, you don't.
Yeah, I mean, it's so interesting because it ties into all sorts of other conversations I've had recently too, like just with lead magnets. You know, I think a lot of people think lead magnets, courses, things like that, the longer, the better, right? And it's really like, no, you want to be able to, like, you want to meet somebody where they're at, answer the questions that they have, you know, explain your value. And you might be able to do that in one page, you know? But I would love to get back to talking about pricing a little bit. So where does pricing fit into, I guess, the booking process? You know, so if you send over a proposal and it generally has maybe information about collections, where do you include, you know, those other line by line items that somebody might need to know about before they actually make a decision?
Absolutely. So I think pricing starts at the website, exactly like you said. You want to remove price shoppers from your initial consultations with people. So having a starting at price point for your collections packages, the average client spend, if you have maybe like more of a floral business, that's a great example, giving people some sort of baseline. That way, your inquiries, if you don't have pricing right now and you do that, your inquiries are going to decline, but your conversion rate's going to incline. And that's a direct correlation between removing price shoppers. So once you have kind of these ideal clients that are coming to your site, they see that you are within their budget and they're going to book a consultation with you, having those conversations, that's really when you get to understand what it is that they're looking for. And you can then build out the pricing. They already know what your package starts at. And so if you're a planner and your package starts at 10,000, they know that starting at, so then you could quote them 12, you know, because maybe their wedding is more complex or you have to travel, whatever it is. So I think those are the key parts to understand how pricing plays into the selling part of this. When you're in those conversations, the client shouldn't leave having to decide what package is best for them. I think that you can navigate in your conversation what package is best for them, and then sending them that booking, that contract, or that, you know, one pager about that exact contract. So if we took like photographers, for example, they might have three collections. Sending that to your client saying, here are the three collections. Well, what if that client just picks the lowest price and it's $5,000 and 6 hours of coverage, but you know that on their wedding day, they explained the day in depth and it sounds like 10 hours right there. That's going to be a huge disconnect and is going to cause friction when it comes to then building the timeline. So why not have that conversation? Say, you know, I really understand like pricing is a thing. I would encourage you to go with 10. And then in that circumstance, you can say, why don't I include an extra? And you add in a value add to the package to make that package more valuable so that they can book at that higher price point to get what they need. And I think as our job as vendors, we have to educate them, about what it is that they're going to need or what it is that they want. And yes, everybody does have a budget, but if you deliver something just because of a budget, you might not meet that client's expectation. And then what does that look like? So I think we have to think also about how I can set myself up for success for the wedding day today at the booking.
Yeah, 100% I agree about education and how important that is, I think, to the client experience. And as the expert, I mean, it's an opportunity to, I guess, establish ourselves as the expert, to be able to say, hey, you know, I hear what you're saying about this. I think for your needs, this is really what you're going to need for your wedding day in terms of hours of coverage or, you know, additional planning, you know, whatever it might be. So, you know, just trying to get an idea of the workflow here. Somebody lands on the website, somebody sends you an inquiry. is that when you would send this sort of initial proposal out, but maybe not with pricing? I guess, what do the steps look like based on your experience with Rock, Paper, Coin? Because Rock, Paper, Coin, you all work with so many different event professionals.
We do. And so we do see a lot of that.
Yeah. And you get to see sort of the ideal setups too, you know, maybe some of the more high converting setups. So I would love to hear from your perspective, like, what does that booking process look like for some of maybe your higher converting customers?
I think there are a few categories that are outliers that would not be included in this conversation. And those are things like photo booths, where you're just selling a product, you know, they're picking truly like probably an hour package and maybe the backdrop color. I think that actually can go into more automated workflows because you don't need to fully understand right away what it is that maybe they're needing. So there are some outliers to, I think, the conversation, which I do want to just call out. But as a whole, what we have seen is a lot of people will have consultations. So they'll hop on Zoom or a phone call, 10, 15 minutes, maybe 30, chat with every client, the potential client, move them then into that proposal contract invoicing. I think higher converting clients actually skip the proposal process. And so if you remove a proposal and you just talk about it and you actually just put your pricing in the contract and you put the package in the contract and sales, there's something called an upfront contract, which you do in a consultation. And I'll just go on a tiny little tangent here for a second. So an upfront contract is at the beginning of a consultation, you just state the expected outcome. So you're like, I've got 45 minutes for this call. I'm super excited to chat with you. I want to hear about, you know, what you're envisioning, what you want, you know, when you're looking for a wedding planner. I would love to then tell you about our services. And if all that goes well, I'd love to send you a sample contract. And that's the upfront contract. You don't actually say, you know, I'm giving you this upfront contract, but you're agreeing already to the sample contract. So after the consultation, you say, you know, I think what probably would be most helpful is I'm just happy to pop over that sample contract so you can take a look at the terms. I'll put all of the pricing in there, you know, so you don't have to remember exactly all the items that we talked about today. That sample contract is a real contract you can sign. And through digital signing, you don't have to collect addresses anymore. You don't have to collect social security number. You know, you don't have to collect these like sensitive information. I'm joking about the social security number part, but digital signing allows you to put in text box. So you don't need any of that. So just send them the sample templated contract with that pricing, that package that you've talked about, let them review it and let them sign it if it works. And you've just taken out and saved yourself 2 to 3 days. And with Rock, Paper, Coin, with HoneyBook, with Dubsado, with all of these, contracts are now attached to invoices. So when you build out that contract, you're building out that invoice. The minute they sign the contract, they're prompted to pay the invoice. It's a package deal. So that right there, you can have a conversion within 24 hours by moving to a workflow that is supporting the booking. And I think that is the key part with the industry that I really see people being afraid to do, is to ask for the booking. And we as creatives, inherently, it is not in our blood to say, can I send you the contract? Are you ready to sign the contract? We very much want to be in service. So we're like, talk to other florists, let me know if I can answer any questions. And as a planner, I've sat in these meetings where the vendor is talking themselves out of the sale. And I'm like, time out. I need you to sell yourself because I sold you before this meeting. And I think that's something we miss as creatives, is just being a little bit more upfront, and it's okay. You will have a higher conversion rate.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting because, you know, and not everybody would probably agree with this, but I think one of the most like disorienting things about going to CarMax or something like that is that they don't try to sell you. I think once somebody raises their hand and says, hey, I'm interested in this. Like at that point, basically what they're asking is, hey, can you tell me what would be the best fit for me? You know, like they're giving you permission to sell to them. And so, you know, at that point, like when somebody is like, you know, well, I don't know, any of these would work. To me, I like as a consumer, I find that very disorienting. I think like, you know, of course, you think about, you know, that salesman who just catches you as you're walking into another store or whatever and tries to sell you something that you haven't raised your hand, you know, expressing interest in.
It can be obviously very off-putting.
Yeah, yeah. That's a very different situation. But somebody who's already got to the discovery call or consultation call or something like that, they're obviously interested and they're asking, hey, which is the best situation here? I think a few things that we've done in the past, and I'd be interested in like just your observations and your, I guess, your past experience as a wedding planner as well. Some of the things that you did to ask for the sale. You know, for us, one of the ways that we did it, which felt like this isn't super pushy, but just kind of stating the reality, is like, hey, you know, we book on a first come, first serve basis. So we'd love to send you a contract just so that you have it. Just know that we can't hold your date until we receive the signed contract and the retainer, you know, something like that. And we felt like that was a non-pushy way of saying like, hey, this opportunity might not be here forever. But I don't know if there's some other ways that you've coached people in the past or have had experiences just asking for the sale.
Yeah, I think it's brilliant. And everybody needs to find what works for them and what they're comfortable saying, because for you, that rolled off your tongue perfect. It sounded very confident and it works really well for your business. If there was another person that doesn't feel comfortable saying that, then if you get awkward, it's going to sound awkward and it's going to feel then salesy. So I think businesses just have to practice in consultations what works, what doesn't, and you might bomb some and that's okay. But once you find what works, then it's just a step and repeat. And then at that point, you watch the bookings just come in. For us, I have, I think, an 87% conversion rate. I still do consultations for the planning company. For me, the sample contract is what I use through and through because it's so non-committal. And then I have an expiration date and that contract expires in 4 or 5 days, you know, whatever it is. So that at that point, and I'll let them know, you know, just be like, I'll send you that sample contract. It is going to be in a digital signing format. Like if you want it in a PDF, just let me know. It does expire after 4 days. So just take your time and let me know if you have any questions. And I make it sound so casual, but there's a clock ticking. And so then they feel this like, okay, we had this amazing conversation. They might not have time to meet with that many other people. So they're under that same pressure as you are putting out. It is not a bad thing. Exactly like you said, sales gets such a bad rap because everyone thinks it can be so icky and pushy, and it doesn't have to be, but you're a commodity. So, I mean, everybody should act like it and then you'll be treated like it. And I think that's really what we miss a lot of the time.
Yeah. I think one of the other things I love about the sample contract as well, and would love to hear about maybe some tips you have for, you know, getting to an 87% conversion rate, because that's awesome. But it's just that by sending the sample contract, you are, there is a like element in the background of the assumption that, yeah, this is going to happen, you know, and I, during discovery calls, you know, oftentimes we're going to talk about the project as if we are planning the project. Back when we were doing wedding photography, way back when, you know, it was like, hey, you know, when would you like to do your engagement session? You know? And so it's not, do you want to do an engagement session or not? It's like, hey, when would we schedule this? You know? And so all of a sudden you're already planning the process with the client. And I feel like there's more buy-in that way. And not only more buy-in, but they can start to imagine like what it would look like to work with you a little bit, you know? So I wonder if there's any other, you know, sort of levers that you pull during a call.
So I forget where I read this stat, but I just did a presentation about proposals to a NACE group in Seattle a few weeks ago. And a couple of interesting studies were done about Gen Z buyers, because that is who's going to be starting to buy and come up through the wedding industry. And you are 21 times more likely to book a client if you respond to the consultation request or the inquiry request within 5 minutes. And that stat blew my mind. But the further I read through the study, it made sense, because when you respond first, you book the first meeting. And when you book the first meeting, you become the expert. You are telling them about your business category for that first time. So any other meeting they have behind that is in constant comparison to that first meeting. And that's really where you want to be, is that expert. And the other statistic that followed on that is that is because 50% of the people that are buying in the wedding industry buy from the first vendor that they meet with. So right there, just getting that first meeting, you already have a 50% chance of booking them. So like, why wouldn't you want that first meeting? So I think that is like one of the biggest things to take away from like a sales process.
Yeah. I have a couple of questions too on the Gen Z side of things, and even answering inquiries and maybe some things that you've seen. You know, one of the things that we used to be pretty strict about was like, if someone reached out via DM on Instagram, it would be like, hey, send us an email here and we'll get back to you. Like, we didn't want to deal with like Facebook messages and things that, like that, right? But now what we found is like, we'll respond to that inquiry on Instagram just as we would via email. I guess not exactly the same way, right? Like the language is probably more casual, but we'll just send over information in that channel. I was talking with another friend who runs a wedding venue, and he was basically like, yeah, we'll send over our venue walkthrough link via DM now, because like this younger generation, they just don't want to send you an email. Or if they have to go through the extra step of sending an email, like they may not do it, you know? So I was wondering if you've seen any trends like that.
100%. So the other statistic was that more people find their wedding vendors through Instagram and TikTok than Google in the current state. So more referrals are coming in from social media than from Google, which I think, you know, for us that have been in the industry long enough, like Google reigned king or queen for all of these years. So this is a huge shift, is that, you know, social media is going to be where people are reaching out to you. And to your point, I think being able to have tools set up to chat over DM is really important, because if you are not on social media, then don't allow that to be a channel for communication, where if somebody sends you a DM, have an automated message that goes out that says like, thanks so much for your email, here's a Calendly link, you know, set yourself up with tools so that they can then book and get that information. But if you can't respond to a DM within a couple of hours, then don't pretend that that's a great way for people to reach out to you on. And I think that's the big disconnect. If you are heavy over email and that's where you can respond within an hour, 2 hours, great. Then get those messages over to email. Otherwise, have a Calendly link, like have tools set up, automated messages that people can get the information. I think the link in bios are really a wonderful tool for a lot of companies with social media now, whether that's a link tree, it's a hidden page on your website. You know, I think there's like bio.site or something where when they click on that link, it can pull up various links where you want to direct them so that they can find your pricing, they can find your past photos, they can find your contact form or just your email and your phone number. They then have all of the information at their fingertips through that one link. And then if they decide to DM you, they get your Calendly link sent right away so that they can book that consultation.
Yeah. And there's so many tools like ManyChat now too, that can like really automate your social media in a big way. What about, and you know, I know I want to respect your time, but what about trends in the wedding industry right now, especially when it comes to bookings? You know, there was this big boom post COVID, and then, you know, I'm trying to remember the term. I feel like I read recently there's a term for the slump. Yeah. The engagement gap, right? So, you know, what are you seeing on your side? Do you have any general thoughts about the engagement gap and what wedding vendors in particular can expect over the next couple of years?
Yeah. So I think we had 3 years of utter chaos in this industry. It was COVID, and then it was post-COVID, and it felt like post-COVID again with like, you know, just this huge boom. And I think we have forgotten what the normal like engagement timeline is, because we didn't have anything until, we don't have anything since 2019 to compare it to. And that's 4 years ago. So I do think this engagement gap is something we're just assigning a term to. But I think that the buying behavior is completely different because it's a completely different generation. So I don't think that it's a little unfair as the industry for us to assume that this next generation is going to do exactly what the last generation did. And we're seeing the shift. We are moving from millennials to Gen Z. And this is the new buying behavior of Gen Z. They are way more thoughtful. They are way like more methodical. They want to align with brands that they see they have values. They see that they have like the core values on their website, that they have their diversity pledge or their, you know, I don't know, conserving water pledge, whatever it is. This is a generation that has bleeding hearts. And so it's going to take them a little bit to find the people that they want to work with, which is just having a longer time for them to book their vendors. And we're seeing that firsthand at the planning company too. There are still millennials getting married. So that's why it feels like this engagement gap is a real thing, because millennials are fairly quick to buy. They also still have a lot of COVID trauma where they think that they're not going to get their vendors, they're not going to get their venue. So there's these bookings that come through and they have this rushed sense about them. And then there's these bookings that come through and they're like, well, if that doesn't work out, like then that wasn't meant to be and I'll keep looking. And I think it's this big generational shift and less about an engagement gap.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's really interesting. You know, I can't believe you do it all too, you know, running the software business, also running the planning business as well. Well, I really appreciate your time. Anything else that we should chat about before signing off here?
No, this is so fun to chat. And I know we actually took this conversation a little bit of a left turn and kind of left proposals hanging a little bit. So sorry about that.
No, not at all. I mean, these are a lot of conversations. I still have a ton of friends in the wedding industry. We design a lot of websites for wedding industry professionals as well. So I think it's really interesting to hear, especially in light of some of the conversations that I've had recently. So I think other people find this fascinating as well. Where can people learn more about you and Rock Paper Coin?
Yeah, so we're rockpapercoin.com, and you can follow us on Instagram, TikTok, if you want to see some bad videos from yours truly. And then if anyone has any questions or wants to reach out, you can email me, elizabeth@rockpapercoin.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to the Brands That Book Show. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider subscribing, leaving a review on Apple Podcasts, and sharing this episode with others. For show notes and other resources, head on over to davianchrista.com.